We go back more than 150 years to the middle of the 1800s for an interesting, significant experience that is listed in the writings. I quote, "God sent a beautiful jewel box, a beautiful jewel box that was filled with brilliant jewels to an elderly man. This is a dream that this man had in the middle of the 1800s. God sent a beautiful jewel box filled with brilliant jewels to an elderly man. The box was 10 inches long and it was 6 inches square at the end, made out of black ebony and laid or inlaid with precious pearls. This beautiful jewel box was filled with all sorts and sizes of jewels, diamonds, precious stones, gold and silver coins, every size, every value, beautifully arranged within the jewel box and reflecting the light from the brilliance thereof, and that the light seemed to be even brighter than the sun. Now the elderly man in this dream took the jewel box, placed it on a table in the center of the room, and then he invited other people to come in and to look at this beautiful sight, a sight that was most brilliant indeed to behold. Many people came in, enjoyed the sight, and then more people came in, and then they began to take the jewels out of the box and scattered them on the table. And the elderly gentleman asked him, "No, please don't do that. Just come in and look." But the more that he pleaded for them not to disturb the jewels in the jewel box, the more the people came in and they took handfuls of the jewels and the stone, the coins out, put them on the table. Finally, others came in, and then they started to take the jewels and the coins out of the jewel box, and then they started to scatter them around the room, throwing them around hither and yon. And the elderly gentleman pled with those people, "Please do not spoil the coins. Please do not spoil the gems. Please do not scatter them around the room. Please do not scatter them on the table." But the more that he pled, the more the people that came in to enjoy the sight did exactly what he asked them not to do. And so then more people came in and they brought in fake jewels and fake coins. And then they scattered these fake coins and jewels in amongst all of the genuine coins and jewels on the table, on the furniture, on the floor, anywhere, everywhere in the room. And then finally, other people came in and they brought in sand and dirt and rubbish and garbage, and they scattered this around the room as well, until ultimately all the jewels were lost to sight. And not only that, but the last group of people that came in took that beautiful jewel box, they broke it into pieces, and they threw the pieces around the room as well. The elderly man pled with these people, and they took no note of what he encouraged them to do. He became discouraged, and he sat down, and he wept. And he prayed. And then the door opened, and a tall young man entered the room with a small dirt brush in his hand. When he came into the room, everybody else left. The tall young man began sweeping around the room, and the elderly gentleman asked him, "Please don't spoil the gems. Please don't spoil the coins." And the tall young man said to the elderly gentleman, "Fear not, I will take care of them." And so the tall young man went around the room, brushing hither and yon all the dirt and the sand and the garbage and the rubbish was swept out of the open window, leaving only around the room the coins and the genuine gems in bright profusion. And so the elderly man closed his eyes for a moment, and when he opened his eyes again, and it is significant to note that he closed his eyes, the elderly man closed his eyes for a moment, then opened his eyes again, and he found that as a result of the tall young man that came in, all around the room were scattered the brilliant jewels, gems, coins in brilliant profusion. Then the tall young man placed a new jewel box on the table, much larger and much more beautiful than the original one. And then he picked up the jewels and the coins from around the room, on the floor, on the furniture, on the table, put them into the new jewel box. And then when he had finished, he invited the elderly gentleman, come and look now at the jewels and the coins in this new beautiful jewel box. So the elderly gentleman came and he looked into the box, and he saw that everything was packed in beautifully and neatly and clearly, and that it was in rich profusion, and the sight was 10 times more brilliant than had been the sight before. Not one gem or one coin was scratched or spoiled, even though they had been scattered around the room. And the elderly man, when he looked in there and saw the box with all of the gems and all the jewels that were 10 times brighter than the original, he shouted with joy. And that shout woke him up. There is a double interpretation of this story about the jewel box. The first interpretation is that the jewel box is the Bible, and each jewel is a Bible truth. The tall young man, of course, with the small dirt brush was Jesus himself. A second application as an interpretation is that the jewel box is the Lord's church, and that each jewel is a Bible believer, and that the room is the world. The parable of the beautiful jewel box. The elderly gentleman was William Miller, and he had this dream in the year 1847. At that time, he was 65 years old. 2 years later, he closed his eyes. But that parable of the jewel box seems to indicate that one day he will open his eyes again, as all of God's people will. The end came for him 2 years later, and he died on December 20 in the year 1849. The story of the beautiful box of jewels is found in the Adventist book, Early Writings, on page 81, and you can read it there for yourself. Before we go any further with the parable of the box, the beautiful box of jewels, we pause for an affirmation in the things of faith. And this time, we will look at the first commandment, the first of the 10 commandments. This is what we discover. First Bible commentary: when the law was spoken, the Lord, the creator of heaven and earth, stood by the side of his son, enshrouded in the fire and smoke on the mount. The book of Exodus tells us about that. And when you have the privilege, the opportunity, of going there and looking at that mountain, you can stand back in awe and you can see the triple-headed mountain there from which the law of the Ten Commandments was proclaimed by God long, long ago. The first of the Ten Commandments, in summary, Exodus chapter 20, verse 3, God declared, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." Commentary: Jehovah, the eternal, self-existent, uncreated one, himself the source and sustainer of all, is alone entitled to supreme reverence and worship. Man is forbidden to give to any other object the first place in his affections or his service. Whatever we cherish that tends to lessen our love for God or to interfere with the service due to him, of that do we make our own God. You might remember that in the book of Deuteronomy, under the leadership and the ministry of Moses, there was a reiteration, Deuteronomy, the second law, the second giving of the law. And so the Ten Commandments were spelled out again. Exodus, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Deuteronomy, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. Man is required to love God supremely, that is, with all his might, mind, and strength. And in the New Testament, a reiteration of these things, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, and with all thy mind. That's found in the Gospel of Luke. Another reading, this time about the coming of Jesus in the glory and majesty, beginning of eternity. Christ is coming with power and great glory. He is coming with his own glory and with the glory of the Father. He is coming with the glory of the holy angels with him, and obviously the Holy Spirit as well. While all the world is plunged in darkness, there will be light in every dwelling of the saints. They will catch, we will catch, the first light of his second appearing. The unsullied light will shine from his splendor, and Christ, the Redeemer, will be admired by all who have served him. While the wicked flee from his presence, Christ's followers will rejoice. To his faithful followers, Christ has been a daily companion and a familiar friend. We have lived in close contact, in constant communion with God. Now we rejoice in the undimmed rays of the brightness and glory of the King in his coming majesty. We are prepared for the communion of heaven, for, direct quote, we have heaven in our hearts. That's beautifully stated, isn't it? We have heaven in our hearts. One day we will inhabit heaven in eternity. And so thus far, in summary, three things. The dream of the beautiful jewel box, an affirmation, the importance of the first commandment, and the coming of Jesus in glory and majesty. And the topic for the day, as was listed, the parable of the beautiful box of jewels. Now, we want to concentrate an emphasis on jewels here in our world. We are aware, of course, of the Adventist stance, the biblical stance regarding these things, 1 Peter 3:3, the same author as some of the books that we have been looking at in recent time in our Sabbath school studies, the last quarter and so on. But Peter says there, regarding these things, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning, plaiting the hair, wearing gold, putting on of clothing, and so forth. This is not the direction that God's commandment-keeping, Sabbath-observing, Advent-hoping people are following. We are not placing a major emphasis on the things of life and the things of adornment and so forth. We are moving in a very different direction. In the professed Christian world, direct quote, there is enough expenditure in extravagant display for jewelry and ornaments to supply the wants of all of the hungry and clothe the naked in our towns and cities here within this country. In other words, if the population of this country put an emphasis on the needy people and did not enter into the ornamentation that is sometimes popular, the additional funding would provide sufficient to clothe and the naked, and to feed the hungry. I might also add something that was not in that statement, but the population of this nation spends more on the usage of alcohol and tobacco than in the Christian church. Christian denominations are presented to the Lord in tithes and offerings. The population is destroying itself, alcohol and tobacco, and that money could be used with tithes and offerings on the part of God's people for the benefit of the work in our world. Now, looking at the information in the Bible, if you turn in the book of Genesis to some interesting statements here, there are three parallel overviews of creation as they are given in the first couple of chapters of Genesis. There's a summary, an outline, and another outline, each of which is complementary, supplementary to the other. And you will notice when you come to the book of Genesis in its second chapter, Genesis chapter 2, and looking at verse 11 regarding the Garden of Eden and so forth. Verse 10 is an introduction. A river went out from Eden to water the garden and so forth. Verse 11, the name of the first river, Pison, that is that which encompasses the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold. And obviously, in the creation of planet Earth, back there 6,000 years ago, God gave a deposit of gold in the land of Havilah. Now, where that land was, we would never know, simply because the flood devastated the entire surface of planet Earth, almost 2,000 years later. But back there at the beginning, there was a storage, a cache, a load of gold that was found in what they called the land of Havilah. And verse 12, the gold of the land is good. Gold does not get rusty. It cannot be tarnished. It cannot be formed into another compound. You cannot cut gold oxide or gold chloride or anything. Gold is gold on its own. And it cannot be taken into chemical reactions with other of the items that are formed in chemical reactions with other materials. Now, you'll notice also that it says in verse 12, there is bdellium, a strange spelling, looks like some sort of a foreign word, and the onyx stone. And so, in other words, there were deposits of precious stones that were out from the Garden of Eden that one day could be utilized by the human race back then. Gold deposits, bdellium, crystal, and onyx, marble. And obviously there were huge deposits of other minerals and chemicals as well. Iron, salt. There are still massive deposits of salt that are evident in various parts around the world as it is today. Now, as far as the jewels are concerned, in subsequent time, the application of tremendous pressure and heat will sometimes form that which has become known as precious and semi-precious stones. There are approximately 200 different varieties of natural gems in our world. Science has been able to manufacture synthetically approximately the same number, 200. The rarest jeweled gem is found in Burma. There are only 25 copies of it that have ever been discovered, 25 pieces. It is called painite, P-A-I-N-I-T-E. Interestingly, back in the Middle Ages and a little bit later, glass was considered to be a precious gem, a precious jewel. It was classed that way. We know, of course, that glass can be manufactured from beach sand, heated in a furnace and put it through some procedures, and you can turn it into glass. And interestingly, if you happen to be somewhere at a safe distance from a lightning strike at the edge of the ocean, if the lightning strike strikes the beach sand and you go and have a look there afterwards, you will find a rough, hollow glass tube that has been formed out of the sand of the beach by the direct heat caused by the lightning strike. Now, by taking beach sand, putting it through processes, then you can turn it into glass. Solidified molten lava on the big island of Hawaii sometimes looks a little bit like glass. But if you take regular glass, put lead into it, it will sparkle as in a crystal. Put iron into it, it will be suitable for making into a projector or a camera lens. Put gold into it, and the glass will look a deep ruby red. Put aluminium into it, or if you prefer the other pronunciation, aluminum, it will become Pyrex for glass, such as we use in the kitchen. Put copper into it, it will become a red color. If you put sodium carbonate, washing soda, into the glass mixture, that glass will dissolve in water. That would seem to us to be an impossibility, but that's what they tell us in the information this way. That's glass. What about gold? Well, you can find alluvial gold, particular specks of gold in the bed of a river. Large nuggets are occasionally found, and the largest nugget that has ever been discovered anywhere was the Welcome Nugget that was discovered in Australia in 1869. Now, I wasn't there at the time, so never saw that nugget back there originally. But it weighed 173 pounds, a massive piece of gold discovered that way. Scientists can make gold from lead and mercury, but it is more expensive to do that than to actually find gold and care for it in the usual way. In ancient Egypt, they used to take gold and beat it till it was very, very fine, until 1/3 of a million pieces of beaten gold could be stacked together into 1-inch thick stack, 1/3 of a million. It was so thin that you could look through the beaten gold. It was still into one square sheet, and it would look a greenish blue. 1 ounce of gold can be beaten that way until it forms a sheet of gold 300 feet square. Diamonds made from carbon, generally speaking, the hardest substance known to mankind. You can get diamonds, find them. I guess South Africa is one of the major places. You can get them in clear, red, yellow, brown, green, blue, smoky, and black. I did not know that until I read it on the internet. Maybe some of you folk from South Africa have seen some of the colored diamonds. I have seen only a clear diamond. Can be burned by fire. Find them in the riverbeds, deep underground, and sometimes in association with volcanic activity, tremendous heat and tremendous pressure. Science can make a diamond also out of carbon, but it's more expensive to do it that way than any other. And they can make diamonds out of any form of carbon, even from peanut paste. Be careful what you eat at lunch. It might be a diamond instead of peanut paste. There was only one jewel that science had made that is not found in nature, and that was called fabulite. But recently they discovered new deposits in Siberia and elsewhere, and they have rediscovered that fabulite is also available in nature, as well as being manufactured in the laboratory. Well, there are a lot of other jewels from A to Z, from the agate to zircon, 200 varieties. But what does the Bible say about jewels and gems and gold? 35 different gems are mentioned in the Holy Scriptures. From A to X, adamant, to the onyx, taking the X at the end of that word rather than the beginning. The book of Exodus chapter 28 tells us verses 17 through 20 regarding the breastplate of the high priest. And you will remember it was a double thickness of material, and sewn into the embroidery were 12 precious stones, each stone different. And upon the surface was inscribed the name of one particular tribe of the children of Israel. And these 12 were set out there in the breastplate of the high priest. Now, it's an interesting thing that there is a similarity between the stones, the precious gems upon the breastplate of the high priest, and the foundations of the New Jerusalem. And for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, I have tried to match the gems that are found on the breastplate of the high priest with the foundations of the New Jerusalem. But I found a statement in one of the books recently that gave a key to this information. Story of Redemption, page 183. They, that is the high priest back there in ancient Hebrew economy, the high priest wore a breastplate bordered with precious stones. Not only were there the 12 precious stones, but there was a border of precious stones as well. And this statement says, I read it again, the high priest wore a breastplate bordered with precious stones, the same as composed the 12 foundations of the city of God. In other words, it's not the 12 that list the tribes of the children of Israel that are represented by the foundations of the New Jerusalem, but rather the border of the breastplate that carries this information this way. Revelation chapter 21, 19 and 20 gives you a listing there of the precious stones in the New Jerusalem. Now, what about the application of these things as far as human experience is concerned? Salvation ministry. I read some pretty strong statements that are found in the sacred writings. Psalm 51, verse 5, the writer says, I was born a sinner. Yea, from the moment that my mother conceived me, I was born a sinner. We see a beautiful new baby, young little kid, boy, girl, and we could admire them. But the writings tell us that even back at that stage, that little kid is a sinner. And when you were that little, you were that sinner also. Psalm 58:3, even from birth, the wicked go astray. You are an abomination before the Lord. And without salvation ministry, without faith, there is no way that you can be anything else. Everybody is involved in sin. I read 2, 4, 6 statements, one after the other, from the Holy Scriptures, Jeremiah, Psalms, Romans, Isaiah. I read them without reference. You have done worse than your fathers. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. They have all gone astray. All are rotten with sin. Take some food home from the shop, put it in the fridge. Day or two later, one of the oranges or some other piece of fruit has gone rotten. They have all gone astray, not just a few. They have all gone astray. All are rotten with sin. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. The Lord, again a direct quote from the Bible, the Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. Where does that leave you? Where does that leave me? Not only is our sin an abomination before the Lord, even the very good deeds that we discussed about in the Sabbath school lesson this morning, salvation by quotes works, shall we say, good deeds. Even our good deeds are not good enough. I read 3 simple statements again. Isaiah, quoting, you have, quoting Isaiah, all our righteousnesses, our good deeds, are as filthy rags. Adam and his creation was endowed with 20 times as much vital force as men now have. We are midgets before divinity. The human race is so greatly depreciated in these last days that we appear inferior and almost valueless. Leaving things there, we are an abomination before the Lord. In the things of faith, a different story. 2 Peter 3:9, the Lord is not willing that any should perish. Commentary statements, Christ would have died for one soul. Another statement, one soul is of more value than the entire world. In other words, an empty planet, one soul, one human being is of more value than an empty planet. I read now some other statements. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 7 in the WEB version. Your faith is more precious than gold. And because we have faith in the Lord, because we have faith in the ministry of Jesus in the plan of salvation, then we are a jewel before the Lord. 1 Peter 1:7, your faith is more precious than gold. I read a commentary statement. God regards his people as precious gems in the jewel box of his love. That's nicely stated, isn't it? God regards his people as precious gems in the jewel box of his love. God has his jewels in all of the churches, and it is not for us to make a sweeping denunciation of the professed religious world, but in humility and in love, present to all the truth as it is in Jesus. The scripture reading, as was read a little while earlier, Malachi 3:17, last book of the Old Testament. They shall be mine, saith the Lord. They shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels. Ministry of Healing, 486. God preserves as a precious jewel everyone whose life is hid with Christ in him. God preserves as a precious jewel everyone whose life is hid with Christ in him. And a 2-4-6 word sentence. Christ's redeemed ones are his jewels. In salvation, we are worth eternity. Outside the pale of salvation, we are an abomination before God, an abomination before the world. We are his precious jewels. Now, you might remember when we came in and sang our opening hymn, and we will sing our closing hymn in a moment. But the opening hymn was number 645, God of Our Fathers. Dramatic grandeur in that hymn. Now we sing another hymn, number 218, 218, and the title, When He Cometh. When He Cometh to Make Up His Jewels, all His jewels, His precious jewels. Sometimes we sing this as a children's hymn, but I think we can look at the wording of it, which today looks upon God's people as his precious jewels. Number 218, when he cometh to make up his jewels, all